Money, Riches, and Wealth is sponsored by the Financial Consulate.
Say you don't need no diamond rings, and I'll be satisfied. Tell me that you want the kind of things the money just can't buy. I don't care too much for money. Money can buy me love.
This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
This is Drew Tignanelli here, Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here with Michael P. McCarthy.
Happy to be here, as always.
Yeah, I guess Chris handled the show for me last week and talked about Medicare and Medigap insurance and so forth. I guess it was a good show. Hopefully there's still people listening tonight, you know?
Oh, come on. Chris does a great job.
He does. And then,
he's your first-rate co-host.
There you go. Yeah. You know, you're very humble there, Mikey. anyway, we're here on an open show tonight. That means you get to be the guest. Chris had a guest last week, but tonight you're the guest. You get to decide what we're going to talk about and which direction you want to go with this show and say, you know, hey, if you answered this question for me, this could be extremely beneficial to me. And if you want to do that, if you want to direct the conversation tonight, all you got to do is call in 410-922-6680. 410-922-6680 if you want to call in and direct the conversation. And our great producer Chris is here to get your call and put you up on the screen so we can take your call when you call in. 410-922-6680. And we do have one caller online, so we'll go to them right away. But as I have open lines here, I'll just give you that number one more time, 410-922-6680. And we're going to go to Washington in Pasadena, Washington. How can we help you, my friend?
Yes, good evening, Drew and Michael.
Good evening, Washington.
What's up?
I have a question.
Yep.
I've been told that the IRS has a new identity protection PIN.
Yes.
Is that going to create a problem if I have a tax preparer that prepares my taxes?
No.
Not as long as you give it to them.
Yeah. Well, and remember, it's only for certain people. Some states do give you the right to get your own PIN. So you have your own personal PIN that you can put into your tax return. I guess you might have heard me talking with Sean this morning about fraudulent tax returns and refunds that the IRS is giving out or has given out to people for the last 15-plus years. Well, the IRS started to get serious about it about 5 years ago and started to issue PIN numbers to people who have had identity theft on their tax return. And now there's some states are making it available upon your request. Other states, you got to wait until the IRS gives it, unless you know anything further, Mikey.
No, I mean, it's developing. I mean, over the past 5 years, they've tried a couple different things. There was that one year we had to collect everybody's driver's license because we thought they were going to require that. And then they changed their mind. Oh, that doesn't work.
Yeah, right. So, I do believe that there is possibility that if you really want it, you can force the IRS to give you a PIN if you want to have that protection.
Yeah, I think it's like a lot of
that's
things right
I
now. And go ahead, Washington.
I read that they said they're going to open it up for everybody now.
That okay. is the plan. They're supposed to open it up for everybody. If you've heard that they already have, then you might have just beaten us to that information.
When did they say they were going to do that? Is it as of now?
Well, actually, I thought it said now.
I haven't seen or heard that, but I can look into it and find out for sure because I'd like it. It's not a problem. If somebody files a false return in your name, the worst case scenario is that the IRS will defer your refund for a few weeks, maybe a month or so. But normally, when we've had this happen, and I can think of numerous clients who've had it happen, where they filed their return legitimately, wanted a refund, and the IRS came back and said, well, we already have a return filed for you. And the client then had to go to the IRS, file a form with them, and say, no, that must have been a fraudulent return because this is me. Yes, Mikey.
Drew, we've got mud on our face because Washington's been doing better tax research than we have. And as of last month was the first month the IRS is going to let anyone get their PIN. So I know you and I will be
Justin sent us an email about this.
But that was about resetting pins.
Yeah, but it must have been. It must have been related. So way to go, Washington. So
I do have another question.
Go ahead.
Okay, not related, but any of the large institutional investment houses like Charles Schwab or Vanguard invest in hedge funds?
Invest in hedge funds?
Yes.
No. Schwab invests all its own money, but it doesn't really invest much at all because Schwab tends to be a very straightforward company, doesn't want to do the things that some of the big brokerage firms are doing to try to make an investment rate of return on their capital. Schwab prefers to grow the company or disperse it as dividends and not invest it like Morgan Stanley or Merrill Lynch in them.
And I think that that's really the 99% correct answer. The only thing I'll give, in case somebody wanted out there was going to fact check us, Charles Schwab owns interests in a couple other financial institutions that they bought strategically and they have controlling interests. And those might, but that's a very small, tiny little sliver.
Very small, and Schwab probably does some derivative trading so that they can protect against rises
right.
in interest rates or, you know, falling interest rates and things of that sort.
They bought that one investment firm, and I think that investment firm might do something. But it's, again, that's a tiny sliver.
It's a tiny sliver. It's not like Morgan Stanley or Merrill Lynch and them where large amounts of their own capital, the way a lot of these wirehouse brokerage firms make their money is through hedge fund investing and you know, all kinds of different investment strategies. And that's how they blow themselves up. That's how they blew themselves up in 2007, 2008. Anyway, we got to go to a pause. Well, no, actually, we've got 30 seconds. What were you going to say?
Well, I was going to say one of the things I think is interesting for people when they hear hedge fund is one of the biggest aspects of what makes a hedge fund is the fact that it's a little, it's not a little, it's quite a bit less regulated in the sense of what it can buy and what it has to do to buy it. So it can go out there and be very dynamic and buy private companies and buy anything, really.
Yeah, but I think what the way the wirehouses, they're doing the, you know, where they're going long and short at the same time
right.
and trying to have these risk management controls on. Schwab doesn't do that
right.
kind of stuff. And that's the thing that blew them up, the big wirehouse brokerage firms. And that's why Schwab and Fidelity never took any TARP money to try to survive the 2008-2009 downturn. Good question, Washington. I appreciate it. And thanks for the info on that IRS pin. I got to go to traffic. Take it away, traffic. Hi, this is Drew Tignanelli of the Financial Consulate saying a financial advisor must have a tax planning passion. I'm appealing only to those with a net worth of more than $5 million or with taxable income of over $400,000. You are the target for higher and higher taxes. If you're in this elite club, you can no longer afford to have a financial advisor that is not passionate to minimize taxes. I'm appealing to you with income over $400,000 or a net worth greater than $5 million because you are the target and need the Financial Consulate's passion to minimize income taxes and estate taxes. Call to set up your introductory meeting, 410-823-7283 or 410-823-SAVE or online, financialconsulate.com. If your taxable income is $400,000 or more, or your net worth is over $5 million, you are the target. So call to begin your tax plan, 410-823-7283, or online, financialconsulate.com.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth. Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
All right, we're back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're here on an open show, and we've got Glenn on the line. We're going to go to Glenn in a second, but right now we just want to tell our listeners that we're on an open show. If you want to call in, direct a conversation, ask a question that's helpful to you, 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680. If you want to call in, and Mike was saying that Washington was pretty much right,
yeah,
that you can now opt in to get an IP pin to protect your tax return from being filed by a fraudster. And go ahead, Mikey, tell them how to do that.
So again, I think you just found that this is for tax years 2021 and forward, tax filing years, right?
But I actually, it says if I get one right now, I have to, and I file a 2020 return in 2021, you have to put that PIN in on your 2020 tax return.
So to take advantage of Washington's good advice, you would go to irs.gov/IPPIN. irs.gov/IPPIN. And I know you and I are going to be recommending this to a lot of people.
Yeah, I think it's a good thing. You know, if you do have somebody fraudulently file a tax return in your name, basically it would delay your refund for a few weeks, maybe even months, until they can figure out that you are who you say you are and this person is not, and so forth.
They did say it was going to be a vigorous check system to make sure it's you getting the PIN.
Very vigorous. We'll see about that. Anyway, Glenn in Easton. Glenn, how can we answer you? How can we help you?
Well, first off, good evening. And I just wanted to say I was reading an article today about Jerome Powell and his remarks, I guess, before Congress, where he did not see any bubbles in the market. And I'm like, okay, what about the housing bubble that's going on right now? Houses are lasting, what, 1 or 2 days on the market?
Well, Glenn, you know, before you go much further, Mikey's over here and he's shuddering because some people in my office gave me a housing bubble story and I literally launched into a tirade on them of how the housing market is not.
But you're going to be nicer to Glenn.
In a bubble, but I'll be nicer to Glenn. I won't go on a tirade about it, but here's my point, Glenn. Just because houses are selling quickly does not make it a bubble. Okay, what makes things a bubble is excessive free debt. When you have debt that's flowing freely, you have a bubble. When you have just more demand than you do supply, you just have a hot market. Doesn't mean that the market won't cool off and might even go down a little, but a bubble is created by excessive debt that is easy to get and quick and easy to get. I just financed a house, 50% debt to equity, with substantial income to support the loan, well more than the loan would possibly ever require. And it took me 6 weeks of constant answering questions and providing documents to them to get it. Back in 2006, 2007, I knew a kid that made $36,000 a year get a mortgage that cost him $38,000 a year. So his gross income was $36,000, but he got a mortgage that cost him $38,000 a year. And the way he did it was he had friends sign lease agreements with him saying that they were going to pay him almost $30,000 a year in rent, plus his own income that was going to cover, quote unquote, this mortgage. That's a bubble, 2006. This is not a bubble. This is just a hot, market.
I get all that. I remember the liar loans. If you could fog a mirror, you could get a loan. I get all that, right? But there's a lot of people that are getting themselves into a lot of debt right now, buying all these houses at high prices.
Nobody can borrow a lot of house without the income and the assets and the collateral of the house to get that loan, not like 2006. You bring somebody in to me who's borrowed a lot of money and doesn't have the income or the assets to support that loan, and I'll agree with you, then we got a bubble going on. But I don't know it. I am not seeing it.
Okay, fine. What about the bubble of the Fed that's blowing up all this money? You know, Jerome Powell is just spending obviously the government wants him to do it. And you've got Janet Yellen now in the administration, so you've got a revolving door.
I hear you. You know, so you're saying that the Fed balance sheet has blown up. Yeah, and that's true. It has, but it was necessary that it blew up, or else we would have had the next Great Depression after 2006, 2007. So, you know, and then you had this pandemic thing where these governments come up with these absolutely insane, you know, treat us like a bunch of children. That's why we're in the nanny state. You know, Maryland's the nanny state, in my opinion, along with a lot of others, California, New York. You know, I've just bought a house in Florida, and the only difference between Florida and life is normal is probably 90% of the people wear a mask. But when I go into a restaurant in Florida, it's my choice. If the restaurant is crowded, I can stay or I can leave. It's my choice. It don't need no nanny to tell us that we can only have 25% of the people in that restaurant. And Florida's numbers are as good as Maryland's, if not better. So, you know, there's a lot of logic to it and so forth. But I got to run. But if you ever want to actually talk about this in more detail, I'd be more than happy to have some time to do that with you, Glenn. All right?
Great.
And, you know, maybe I put on glasses, Chris, so I can see who the heck I'm talking to. Tom in Towson.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
How you doing, okay. Tom?
I need your help. I don't understand how bond ETFs and bond mutual funds work.
Sure.
I'm looking, I have money that I don't want to put in the stock market because I believe it's overvalued. Maybe I'm wrong, but I want to put it and make a little bit of interest in it. And I'm looking at a short-term bond ETF.
Okay.
But is this, are these, is the ETF, is it constantly buying and selling bonds? In other words.
Sure. I mean, to some degree, not the same way a bond mutual fund might do it. Okay. So an ETF is an index. So it depends on which ETF you're buying too. Okay. So an index says these are the bonds that make up this index. And so is it a treasury ETF or is it a corporate?
No, it's a corporate. It's from Vanguard. It's a corporate ETF.
So they have a set of corporate time and different types of corporations and the amount of time that these the bonds should be to make up the quote unquote index, and then they hold the bonds until they mature, and then when they mature or somewhere before they mature, because they don't want everybody knowing when they're turning the portfolio and the index is changing. So they then bring the new bonds in, and they're holding them according to what the index that they're using says. Now, a bond mutual fund merely has an investment objective, and the manager can achieve that objective any way they want to. If they want to buy and sell bonds every day for the course of the year, as long as they stay within the parameters of the objective. And their goal is to make the best rate of return they can try to make with the objective that they have before them. And they have an index that they use merely as a benchmark as to how they're doing.
Yeah.
So they might use the same index that your ETF is using to actually buy and hold the bonds. The mutual fund might use that merely as a benchmark, but the manager has full latitude to buy and sell as often as they want to.
Okay. So if I buy into, let's say I buy into a bond mutual fund at $100,000, am I locking in certain bonds at, let's say,
not at all.
Interest rate?
You are to some degree on an ETF, but not totally. Okay. Because that index can move, they can change the index as they want to, so they could buy and sell. But in the bond mutual fund, you are not at all. So when they go in, if a whole bunch of people in that mutual fund say, I don't want to be in this mutual fund anymore because it's starting to lose money, and 10% of the people decide to sell out, that bond mutual fund manager must liquidate those bonds, and if he's liquidating them at a loss, you're going to suffer the loss if you're the one still sitting there holding those bonds in that mutual fund.
Yeah, I was actually just talking to another person today about this, which is why at certain size portfolios, we're able to go in and do individual bond purchasing.
Yeah, we do
that. That's the big advantage.
Yeah. If we have clients with lots
of...
Absolutely. In this type of environment, you're always better off in individual bonds, well thought out by somebody. And that's what we do with our larger clients. Our smaller clients that don't have enough money to go to an individual bond manager, we use mutual funds and ETFs, but we're very careful about who we're using.
And the duration.
And the duration and how they're thinking about things and so forth. But it's an excellent question that you're asking.
Question number two.
Well, you're going to have to wait on question number two, okay, because I have to go to traffic, and then I'll come back. I'll get your question quickly, and then I'll go to Keith in, on Social Security. So hopefully Keith will hold. Anybody else who wants to call in, there's still lines open, 410-922-6680. Hold for me, Tom. Take it away, traffic.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
The horse you came in on. Right. Perfect. Anyway. Or was it the horse you went out on? Which is that? You know? It's something like that. Anyway,
how many horses have you been on?
I've never been on a horse. I don't think I have. Now I think about it.
Maybe childhood. There was a pony.
No. No, I'm pretty confident I have never, ever been on a horse. You know, I was in the horse you came in on.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're going back to Tom. Tom, you got to make the question quickly.
All right, quick question. Okay, if I want to buy an individual bond that I like the duration, I like the interest rate, and is it a good rule of thumb, let's say it's selling at a premium, is it a good rule of thumb to buy that bond as long as the interest will cover that premium in 1 year? Is that a good rule of thumb?
I don't think that that's an issue that I would be too worried about. You know, in other words, what you do is when a stock is or a bond is trading at a premium, you just want to know what's my yield to your yield to maturity, what's my yield to duration, you know, or where's the duration? Where, how much time does it take to cover that you know, that
premium,
the premium
and the grade,
the bond that you've purchased and so forth, and what, you know, what's the risk of the bond that I'm buying and so forth. So that's really what you're concerned about, you know, is the yield to maturity, the yield to worst, you know, which means what if the bond's called earlier and so forth, the yield to best, what if the bond stays outstanding until the day it matures, et cetera, despite the premium. You know,
the hard part there is for the individual investor is pricing, because there's a lot of
And you can't trust a stockbroker to do the pricing or try to get you good pricing that.
When we do the individual bonds, we use a group that has their own trading desk, because that's the only way to really know what pricing you're getting.
Yeah, and they actually take advantage of a lot of small investors, because their brokers are just going in buying and selling bonds, don't care what they're paying and stuff. I got to run. Good question, Tom. It's an excellent question, and, you know, if you're going to be owning bonds, individual is the way to go. Keith in Severna Park, are you still there?
I'm still here, Drew.
Go ahead, Keith. What's up?
I had a quick question for you. About 4 years ago, my wife turned 62. You advised us for her, because she was no longer going to be working, to go ahead and draw her Social Security, which she has done. It worked out great. Now, she just turned 66, so she'll be at full retirement age in a couple months. Is there a... so we're paying taxes on like one of every $2 of her Social Security. Is there a baseline income level that we start paying the taxes on at some point? And does that go up because
she's not working anymore, right? So what do you mean by she was paying taxes on one for every two?
We're paying on the Social Security that she gets.
So the Social Security that she gets, you have other income, so that Social Security is showing up as taxable income, is what you're saying.
Correct.
50 cents on the dollar.
Correct. Yeah.
And if your income's high enough, it's 85 cents on the dollar.
Is there a base, a bottom line that we start paying those taxes out, or every dollar gets taxed because we're...
As you're married, okay, your Social Security, the taxation of your Social Security income is based on $32,000 of income. And that's when, and so the way that calculation is done, Keith, is it's 50% of your Social Security plus all your other wages, interest, dividends, capital gains, et cetera, et cetera. If that exceeds $32,000, then you start to pay 50 cents on the dollar. And there's a calculation that's done. Ours does it by a computer. I mean, most people's do it by a computer. And so that's what you have to think about. So what's your salary? Are you still working?
Yes.
What's your salary in general? 20, 50, 100?
Over 100.
Over 100. So basically what's going to happen is 85% of everything she makes is going to be taxable as long as you're making that kind of income, period. End of the story.
The numbers, Keith, if that's what you're looking for, was 32. The 50% realm is 32,000 to 44,000 combined income. And then over 44, it goes up to 85%,
right. But
that number does not go up because she's now full retirement age.
No. That's the rule for everyone, period, no matter when they take Social Security. That's the way the taxation works. Now, your wife can go to Social Security now and say to them, I'm at full retirement age. I don't want to take my Social Security anymore. I want to defer it. And she can defer it for the next 4 years if she wants. You could stop paying taxes on it if you like.
Okay. And once I plan on working until 70, and once I'm 70 and she's drawing half of mine, I take mine, she's getting half of mine, is it still that same income level?
Yes, that 32 and 44 was the rule set by Greenspan in the Social Security Commission back in 1982, and those numbers have not changed since that day, which is an absolute disgrace that the Congress has not inflation adjusted those numbers, because there's nothing that hurts seniors more, low-income seniors more, than the way they tax Social Security. And it's a disgrace that they haven't done anything to adjust those numbers since 1982. So think about it. In 1982, a joint filing couple could have made $32,000 of total income and not paid a nickel in Social Security tax. And the majority of seniors retiring in 1982 didn't make that much money. Now, they almost all make that much money, and they're all paying taxes on it. And it's, you know, if I got into the full detail of how bad this is for seniors, they should be embarrassed in Washington that they allow this to continue to happen. But anyway, I got me on a soapbox again, Keith. You know, but yeah, that's it. Go ahead.
Thank you very much.
All right, buddy. Take care. Good question, though. Darlene in Parkville, how can we help you?
Oh, I have a couple questions, but I got to tell you, when I grew up, I was raised on a farm, and we had one of Trigger's nephews.
Oh,
cool.
As our horses.
Well, when I get my courage up to ride a horse, I'll come ride Trigger's nephew.
I did ride a couple horses, but most of my horse interactions involved a shovel.
Well, and I used to clean stables, but I won't be riding horses. Well, I would if I could afford one, but not anymore, and I'm 74.
There you go.
I'm not. I'm 74.
Young lady.
At any rate, my question is, I believe last week you mentioned annuities, that if you wanted to purchase annuities, you have the ability to help somebody, a client, do that. Is that correct?
We do it, but we do it commission-free. For people that, you know, but you have to be a client of ours that we would do that. And that requires somebody to become a, you know, do a financial physical. So we understand what your goals and objectives are and make sure all your finances are in order and so forth.
And then ensure that an annuity is actually the product that's best for you.
But if you just want to buy an annuity and you want to buy it commission free, we do have people that we would refer you to. We don't get anything from it, but we have people that we know will do it commission-free, just do the annuity for you and so forth. So if you wanted to ask us about that, just call us at the office sometime, Mike or myself, and we'll get you the name of somebody that will do it for you totally commission-free.
And I have to tell you, I'm one of those people who have fallen into the tax gap because I'm working and I'm collecting Social Security.
Okay.
And I'm sitting on owing the IRS somewhere between $9,000 and $10,000 right now, and I have somebody working on it for me, but it's a horrible, horrible.
And it's
feeling.
All because of that Social Security, the way they tax it, you know? I could tell you a real horror story. We had a lady that always was, she made such little money, she paid very little in taxes. And one year, and she still worked. She was like 78 years old. She still worked. But, you know, she still didn't make enough that she paid any taxes. And she didn't pay anything on her Social Security either. Well, one time, she's 70-some years old, she decides she's going to take some money out of her IRA to make a gift to her grandchildren. Out of her heart, she wanted to do this. Well, that $10,000 of extra income that she took out of the IRA to give this gift to her grandchildren, boom, cost the Social Security to become taxable. And all of a sudden, instead of $10,000 of taxes she had $15,000 of income. Instead of owing $200 or $300 in taxes because of the – she had $2,000 of taxes because all of a sudden everything just amplified, pushed her into a higher tax bracket, made Maryland become taxable from an income point of view, et cetera, et cetera. And it was just,
cliff taxing.
It was horrible. It was horrible. And, you know, your heart just bled because they asked me to figure out if there was a way to resolve it. And I said, no. I said it was unfortunate, but there was nothing I could do to fix it.
Yep. It's like when you go out and order a pizza for a friend and then it has an overdraft.
Yeah.
That little $10 pizza now costs you, what, $48?
Yeah. And, if they would have come to me before she did it, I would have said, okay, here's what you do. You take out $2,000 a year and you give it to the kids. Now it would have worked perfectly.
Yes.
But once she took the $10, didn't know what she was doing, bam, it caused that problem. Anyway, good question, Darlene.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Take care. We're on an open show, 410-922-6680. Nobody's online for the last quarter of the show. Feel free to call in, 410-922-6680. Take it away, traffic. Hi, this is Drew Tignanelli of the Financial Consulate saying a financial advisor must have a tax planning passion. I'm appealing only to those with a net worth of more than $5 million or with taxable income of over $400,000. You are the target for higher and higher taxes. If you're in this elite club, you can no longer afford to have a financial advisor that is not passionate to minimize taxes. I'm appealing to you with income over $400,000 or a net worth greater than $5 million because you are the target and need the financial consulate's passion to minimize income taxes and estate taxes. Call to set up your introductory meeting, 410-823-7283 or 410-823-SAVE or online, financialconsulate.com. If your taxable income is $400,000 or more, or your net worth is over $5 million, you are the target. So call to begin your tax plan, 410-823-7283, or online, financialconsulate.com.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
We're back, Money, Riches, and Wealth, and we're on an open show. Open. That means that you get to call in and be the guest and decide what do you want to talk about. So if you feel free, we do have a couple lines open. We do have Jim on the line. We're going to go to Jim in a second. 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680. And we already told everybody about the IRS PIN that you can opt into, and that's something that we think you ought to do, consider doing strongly. But let's go see what Jim, and then we'll talk about any other things that we think are important. Jim in Cordova.
Good evening. Thanks for taking my call.
Where's Cordova?
Between Easton and Roseburg.
Easton
and— North of Easton, right?
Roseburg.
Okay. Well, I'm not familiar with Roseburg.
Roseburg? Centerville, Maryland.
Okay. Centerville. All right. There you go. All right. What's down in Cordova that we can help you with there, Jim?
Well, I just heard you say the lady took money out of a Roth and gave it away.
No. Gave, took money out of an IRA, traditional IRA.
Okay, I have an IRA that I've told I have to start collecting on. I'm 71. I'll be 72 in July.
Okay.
And I'm still working. Now,
where do you work, buddy?
I work at Lowe's.
Okay. Do you have a 401k plan at Lowe's?
No. We're using my wife's 401. Throwing the money in that way. She works for the state.
Right, but you might have access to a 401k. Lowe's might let you open one.
Right. And
see,
let me explain something to you, Jim. You can roll your traditional IRAs into a company 401k plan that you're working for still and not have any required minimum distributions if you want to.
Oh, okay.
So that's what we were talking
about. But it's got to be your 401k,
now,
not yours.
Now, I will warn you, though, that you're already subject to an RMD this year because you said you turned 72 this year, right?
Yeah, I turned 72 in July.
So you do have an RMD for this year. You must fulfill that RMD for 2021. But if between now and the end of the year you take out your RMD, roll the rest of your money into your Lowe's 401k plan, you will then have no RMDs again until you decide to quit Lowe's.
Oh, okay.
Now, here's another thing, too. Do you do any charitable giving between you and your wife?
Oh, yeah.
Well, you should do all of your charitable giving out of that IRA. So let's say you give $4,000 a year to your church. Let's just use that as an example. And let's say that your required minimum distribution from your IRA is $10,000. I would give $4,000 out of my IRA to the church. It's called a qualified charitable distribution. That's four of my 10. That's tax-free money, okay? And I don't have to worry about do I itemize or not. I get the full deduction for that $4,000 of taxable money I give to my church out of my IRA, qualified charitable distribution. I take the rest of it, $6,000 I pay taxes on. That's a pretty cool strategy you should also be employing before the end of this year.
Okay, gotcha. I also will be... I have a piece of property where I'm going to start getting income off of that. Throw that into the Lowe's IRA.
Well, you could, you know. So let's say your rental property starts generating $15,000 a year of income. Okay.
Yeah.
I open up the 401k plan with Lowe's. I use the traditional 401k plan. I take my $30,000 salary and I put $15,000 of it into the 401k. Now, in essence, indirectly, I just deferred that rental income from that building.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, so you got a lot of cool things you could be doing, my friend. You're the kind of person that I just jazz about, you know, figuring out ways to get more and more of your money used in a tax-efficient manner. And this is the problem with most people working with quote-unquote financial advisors. They don't understand these tax sides of the equation.
Yeah, and you mentioned back in one of your other shows, my wife makes more money than I do.
Okay.
And she's 63.
Okay.
I think you explained it one time, the steps for me to take to see if I could go on her Social Security.
Well, you probably don't make that, you know, there's very little chance that the Social Security that she is making and half of that will be greater than your own Social Security. And I'm guessing that you're probably getting somewhere between $1,500 and $2,500 a month from Social Security.
Yeah.
Okay, and if that's true, half of her Social Security is, and when she starts to collect, is never going to be more than what you're getting yourself.
Okay.
So
even though she makes twice what I make,
it doesn't really matter. It's hard for me to try to explain. Unless I actually knew the actual numbers that you were making, but I doubt seriously. But I would say this, Jim, and that is when your wife does go and collect Social Security, you should go with her and have the Social Security representative do the calculation to see if you're entitled to more Social Security under half of hers. But I doubt it's going to work, but it doesn't hurt to ask.
Doesn't hurt to ask,
my friend. But you got a lot of cool things you can do right now. roll your IRA into your Lowe's account, take your RMD, give directly a part to charity, however much you're going to give to charity, do it all out of your IRA, take the rest of your required minimum distribution to yourself, and then set up that 401k to start popping away a lot of money to defer any other taxation you have. A lot of cool things you can do right now, my friend.
Okay, yeah, all right, I better get on the ball. Thanks for all the advice.
Get working on it. All right, buddy. Take care. Good talking to you. Cordova. I'd like to live in a place called
just
Cordova.
North, just north of Easton.
That's a pretty cool sounding name. Sounds like I live in Italy. I mean, could say I live in Cordova, Italy.
I can't tell you how many restaurants in Easton I like.
Yeah, Easton has a lot of great restaurants, you know?
Yeah.
So we had a couple things that we were going to talk about in our next Pulse. Can you remember what they are?
Was the fraud you talked about this morning?
Well, we talked about the Maryland unemployment fraud and the IRS tax refund fraud. It's just it's unbelievable how incompetent government is. Now, if Larry Hogan heard me say that, and I doubt seriously he listens to my show, but if he heard me say that, he would be calling me up telling me how efficient they are at catching this ring of people that are fraudulently. But, you know, here's my opinion. If they're doing it, they probably have already made a lot of money off of them. It's not like they're doing it and Maryland caught them first and foremost. They never made a nickel off of them. They had to have made a bunch of money, and that's why they're doing it like crazy. And now Maryland realized that it's happening, so all of a sudden they ramped up security.
Well, I think the struggle is anytime you try to do something new and you try to do a whole lot of it one time, they're balancing – how quickly do we get to the money to the people who need it versus how much security do we put around it?
Anytime government's going to do that kind of garbage, you know, I understand there are people that really need it, okay? But anytime government tries to do it, they're going to do it ridiculously inefficiently. That's just the way government operates. It's a
off to Drew Island, I say.
That's a great idea. Anyway. We got to wrap up tonight, Mikey. Say goodbye, Mikey.
Goodbye, everybody.
This is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless.
Jolly people you love with love. Show them the way you feel. Things are gonna be much better.